No BS Nutrition is busting claims and taking names, and we're not mad about it.
This is a one-hour food fight against diet culture and its fake science messages.
Instead, we're passionate about celebrating real wellness.
I'm registered dietitian Hannah McGee.
And I'm neuroscience PhD student Tariq Youssef, and this is No BS Nutrition.
You know what, Tariq? I am so glad that we're not on video this week because, not because, like, I actually did my hair this morning, but okay. the sun really, like, did me dirty yesterday. I went to the beach and my nose is, like, I don't know why. I put sunscreen on, like, lathered it on, but for some reason, just my nose is, like, burnt.
Oh, like, really? Like super red.
Yeah.
I actually really, I want to give a huge shout out to Lubriderm Extra Strength Skin Cream for getting me through the past couple of weeks. And if they want to sponsor us, I would be absolutely down to do that.
Yeah, Lubriderm, love it.
Sorry, your nose made me think of that.
Last week you were talking about how your skin was, or you have no skin.
I have no skin, yeah. Okay. Well, I'm happy to hear you're at the beach. That sounds really lovely, actually.
Yeah, it was nice. Pat has some vacation this week, so yesterday I took a little half day, and today I'm going to take a little half day as well, so we can kind of enjoy the really nice weather we've been having here anyways.
I love that. Actually, I'm really excited. I haven't done anything, like, quote-unquote fun in a little bit, and I'm going to one of my best friend's So we, you know, in Nova Scotia, the restrictions have loosened a little bit, so we're able to gather in small numbers. She's getting married, and we're going to her bachelorette shindig thing, which is going to be like a small group of people, but it's going to be so much fun, I think.
Oh, that's amazing. Is the wedding this year?
Yeah, and the wedding's going to be, again, I think it's like max 15 people or something like that you're allowed to have. So yeah, that's going to be, I think it'll make it very special.
Oh, yeah. Super intimate. Yeah. Really, really nice. That'll be nice.
Yeah. No, I'm really looking forward to it. I'm really excited, Hannah. We've got a lot of fun things lined up for listeners, and I'm really excited for them to come out. Like, I almost feel like we can't talk about them. I mean, maybe we shouldn't.
We do want it to be a bit of a surprise, but yeah, we've got lots of exciting stuff in the works for the next couple months. So yeah, stay tuned, guys.
Yeah. I mean, aside from working on the pod, I definitely should have been working on thesis work for the past week, but I don't know if Pat told you, but I've been working on maybe some stuff that also isn't ready to come out yet, but is academic, but it's not thesis related. And that's all I've been doing for the past week. And I'm like, my brain is starting to be like, okay, you need to get back to your thesis. So I've been having so much fun. Well, and also it's been kind of tiring doing a bunch of other stuff, but I definitely am looking forward to getting back to my normal readings for a little bit, I think.
Yeah. When will you be able to go back to the lab?
I think they're going to start letting small groups of people go back in July. I'm very excited. Also very nervous, just because, you know, like that feeling of like, you haven't been on a bike in a long time. You're like, how is this going to go?
Oh my gosh. I even remember, this is probably nothing like what you're feeling, but when in like university, when obviously I took, you know, I did a science degree. I have a bachelor's in science. We had labs and, you know, biology labs, biochemistry labs, all organic chemistry labs, all of those things. And, you know, you'd have your lab and then you'd go like the summer or even like a year without on your courses, like without going into the lab. And then you'd like come into your next lab class or whatever. And it would be like petrifying. Like
I've never seen a test tube in my life. I don't know what you're talking about. It's chemical. Exactly.
I was always so like careful in those labs, like and all the lab assistants and stuff. I'd be like asking so many questions. Where does this go? Where is this? Like, cause I would just, I don't know, for me, like for me to get the hang of something, I have to be doing it consistently and not stop. So then when you
I totally know the feeling.
Few month break or 6 month break or whatever it is, and then you come back, it's like so intimidating to get back into it.
I totally know the feeling. Actually, yeah. I just brought up our text messages for a second because I want to send you a link for the BS of the week that I want to do. And I just wanted to tell the people that are listening before we started, we were having a few technical difficulties and Hannah's mic wasn't working, but she could hear me. But to make sure, she was texting me to ask me if I could hear her, and she started texting me in all caps as if that would somehow get my attention more. Anyway, I thought that was funny. But for the sake of, well, this is a special episode, as people know, because we have a guest that's going to come on. For the sake of getting ready for her, maybe we should dive in.
Yeah, absolutely. Please tell me what your BS of the week is.
So I have to thank my friend Jess, actually Dr. Jess. Maybe I shouldn't say her last name. I don't know if she wants that, but she's a scientist extraordinaire. Yes. One of my best friends who actually gave me this recommendation. So when I give her a grass-fed, organic, leafy green, juicy shout out, thanks, Jess. So her BS of the week recommendation to me was something called Skinny Jab. So what does that conjure for you in your head when you think of Skinny Jab?
Okay, honestly, the first thing that came to my mind was like in kickboxing, like jab.
Oh, okay. Okay, interesting.
But then the next thing that comes to my mind is like a knife, like jab with a knife.
Yeah, okay, you're getting warmer for sure. Okay. So I'm going to send you a link so you can kind of experience this live with me. And people who are at home, definitely I don't endorse this, but if you end up Googling it and somehow ending up on the website, you know, that's your prerogative. Okay, so
yeah, and just so we don't like to link to the
bad. Okay, we won't be providing this link. Yeah,
no, we do not link to like the blood type diet and shit like that. Like unless it's like debunking it.
Yeah, exactly. So Skinny Jab is an injection that, as they say, helps make you skinny. So just in case you're wondering, by the way, during the pandemic, they've been absolutely open. And as they say on their website, they were business as usual because, of course, losing weight, Hannah, obviously is a higher priority than not getting or spreading a deadly virus during a pandemic.
Getting skinny does not stop during a
pandemic. No, getting skinny shouldn't stop. Also, if you're a healthcare worker, you in fact get 20% off because you're not dealing with enough on the front lines. Here's some fat shaming.
Oh my God.
So the place that I'm specifically talking about is a place in the UK, but there are other places internationally that also provide this service where they, yes, it sounds ridiculous, inject you with a substance in order to help make you skinny. Okay. So they're endorsed by none other than the GC. So I'm a huge lover of British pop culture and media. So if you know who the GC is, you know, she's Gemma Collins. She's been on Big Brother UK. She's had a very public fight with New York Tiffany Pollard, reality TV queen. She's a very entertaining disaster of a human being. So they have all these like popular like reality TV celebrity sponsors. Basically, what they end up doing is they prick you with this jab however many times, and they keep saying all over the website that the injection is not the most important part of the process. Huge surprise. Oh. But the meal plan after the fact is in fact what's going to give you the results. Oh, really? So calorie restriction is going to result in weight loss. Okay, what a revelation.
Oh my God.
So it's just, they're basically like shooting themselves in the foot the whole time. The most amazing part of the website, Hannah, if I can direct you to, if you can find Caroline's story. So Caroline's story is the story of the CEO and how she came to found her basically franchise of this company. It's kind of like KFC. Like you can, KFC is the brand, but you can like own your own KFC. So Caroline owns her own Skinny Jab. So Caroline is not only fat shaming you, but she's also literally got the most ridiculous story ever. She basically gives you her little biography. So not because what happened to her is necessarily ridiculous. Well, it is actually, but she tells it in the most incredible way. So actually this part is not funny and I'm not making light of it at all, but she got cheated on. And that is terrible. Okay. And if you've listened to this podcast, you know I hate men. So I'm definitely like with her on that part. But the way she tells the story, and I don't want to spoil it for anybody, but it is literally like Lifetime movie, like Hallmark Channel, soap opera, like Sunday morning drama. Absolutely drama. So I don't want to spoil it, but here's one line. They always say, never trust a short man. His brain is too close to his bottom. And that proved to be true indeed. No, literally, it's a whole page of just like her narrative in this. It's storytelling like you've never experienced before. She deserves an Oscar. She deserves an Emmy Award for screenwriting. I am waiting for it to be turned into a movie where she inevitably ends up with her making millions of dollars stealing money for people because she's fat shaming them. Okay, right. So there's no mention of, you know, healthy lifestyle anywhere on the website. No mention of exercise or nutritional eating as a healthy way of life. All they want to do is promote weight loss. So, by the way, another amazing red flag about diet culture is that it's virtually impossible to find out what the heck they're actually injecting you with, okay? So the actual product. You might be wondering this whole time, what are they injecting people with? So you basically have to go to a hidden part of the website called Health Warning, which is a huge step.
Oh, my goodness. Health Warning. This is what we're injecting you with.
So on Health Warning, you finally find out, they don't actually tell you this is what you're injecting you with, but you basically have to infer. You find out there's this new word on the website that's not anywhere else called Saxenda. So what the hell is Saxenda? So it's basically one of the brand names for a molecule called liraglutide or GLP-1. So GLP-1 is a drug that's... Yes. Yeah, so Hannah's familiar with it. It's not commonly used, but it is used in diabetes care. It increases, and Hannah can tell us way more about this than I ever could, but it increases insulin release, which basically helps lower blood glucose. But it's also been shown that it does not do this efficiently at all. And there's other drugs that are way more approved for this in diabetes care, like Hannah can speak to, I'm sure, like metformin, for example.
Right.
So the worst part is that there's these awful side effects associated with GLP-1. There's actually one meta-analysis that I will link in the show notes in the British Medical Journal, BMJ, that didn't show that GLP-1 necessarily leads to death, but scarily, they specifically say that they don't rule it out as an association. So they're not ruling death out as an outcome of GLP-1 injection. They didn't say it was necessarily linked. I want to be honest and I don't want to clickbait, but it is scary that they didn't rule it out in this meta-analysis. But more seriously, it has been tied to side effects like pancreatitis, thyroid cancer, and a bunch of other things, let alone the fact that it metabolically is not even very efficient, and that's been shown many times. So that's my BS of the week. I actually thought that was going to take me a lot longer to do, but I didn't want to waste time before we have our guest join us. But really, this was a really fun one for me because it was so easy to debunk. There's so many diet culture red flags.
Absolutely.
I just couldn't believe what I was reading.
Like, I want to say I can't believe that something like this exists, but obviously in the world we live in today, I can very well believe it. I like my jaw half the time you were talking was like on the floor.
Yeah. It is hilarious. I mean, like so much of the website is really funny.
It's funny. It's like a joke. Like,
yeah, exactly.
A sad, scary joke.
Yeah, obviously, I don't want to make light of like fat shaming and this awful promotion of weight loss. But what I'm making light of is them. Like, it clearly is a very like shoddy industry, and they're not doing themselves any favors by the way that they're portraying their work online.
No, definitely not. So this is like a UK.
It is, but there's other ones around the world. So, other people also sell Saxenda or liraglutide or GLP-1 injections for the sake of weight loss. So it is an FDA approved drug, but that doesn't necessarily, anything can get FDA approved, but that doesn't necessarily mean that it's efficacious, which in fact, and again, maybe this goes without saying, but maybe I should mention it. Of course, the injections, it might result in short-term weight loss, but again, have not been shown to promote any sort of weight loss maintenance at all. In fact, they've more been linked to these terrible side effects that I mentioned.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. And I mean, you say it's FDA approved, but for the first thing that comes to my mind is like, to me, it makes sense that it's FDA approved, like as a diabetes drug, like,
which it even isn't even that It's not even the best one out there for sure. Treating type 2 diabetes.
Oh dear. That is, well, that's definitely BS. So
definitely BS. Yeah. Thank you, Jess.
Now we are going to introduce our guest for this week. So we've been, you know, we've been mentioning we have a guest on this week. You can probably tell if you've read the title or the description for this episode already, but we are welcoming my good friend and fellow registered dietitian, Lauren McNeil, on
the podcast. We say friend of the pod, Lauren McNeil?
Yes, friend of the pod, absolutely. So like I said, we are having my good friend Lauren on the podcast today. So Lauren is a registered dietitian. She has a master's of public health in nutrition and dietetics from the University of Toronto, which is where... Okay, which is where she currently resides. Her focus lies in plant-based nutrition, and she runs a successful virtual private nutrition counseling practice where she offers one-on-one support as well as her Thriving on Plant-Based Fundamentals virtual course. Lauren also has grown a very impressive, engaging Instagram and blog community under the name Tasting to Thrive, where she shares delicious vegan recipes and evidence-based nutrition knowledge. Her goal is to help people succeed on a plant-based diet, whether they're vegan, vegetarian, or simply want to incorporate more plant-based foods into their everyday eating pattern. And oh my gosh, you guys, Lauren is so knowledgeable. Every time I talk to her, her and I talk like once a month, we try to. And then whenever we get into like nutrition talk, sometimes we've done some Instagram lives together. Like I'm always just blown away at how much knowledge Lauren holds and how well she speaks. Like she is like... I'm sure clients love her so much because she is like just a wealth of knowledge in the plant-based nutrition world. So welcome, Lauren. We're so excited to have you.
Yay, Lauren. Thanks for coming on.
Oh my gosh. What a sweet introduction. Thank you so much to both of you. I'm so excited to be here.
Yeah, we're really excited to have you. I was like wondering whether or not I should, because sometimes like we talk about this a lot, Lauren, but whether or not we should talk about like how we met and whatnot, but it is a bit of a long story. But I will say that
my interest has peaked.
What'd you say?
Now my interest has peaked.
Well, I already kind of told you this, Tarek, but Lauren and I like kind of, we met at the end of university when we were going into our like dietetic internship training, and we kind of like for a couple of years just like switched places back and forth. Like she was living in Ontario and I was in Halifax, and then I went to Ontario for my internship and she went to Halifax. And then like when we finished internship, we switched again. So now I'm in the Maritimes again and Lauren's in Toronto. So we're like, we became friends over the years, but we never got to be in the same place. Like we were always kind of back and forth.
I know. We've always been so back and forth, but I feel like our paths have crossed so many times that we are meant to be in each other's lives.
Yeah, I totally agree. And whenever we are in the same place, we definitely make an effort to get together and catch up. So yeah, we're really excited to talk to you. So I guess the first question we want to ask is just for you to tell us a little bit more about yourself and your journey to becoming a dietitian, specifically a plant-based or vegan dietitian, and also kind of talk about what inspired you to go vegan. And there's kind of like 13 questions in that one question.
Yeah, but just go ahead. Feel free to expand on that as you wish.
Okay, I'll attempt to start from the beginning and do this in kind of chronological order. So I went vegetarian about 9 years ago, I'd say. And I can't remember the specific date or anything like that, but I specifically remember saying, I am never going to go vegan. People who go vegan are crazy. That's never going to happen to me. And like, the classic lines, like I could never give up cheese, that sort of thing.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. But I mainly went vegetarian for animal welfare reasons. I've been obsessed with animals from a small child. I begged my parents to get me a dog when I was a child and they never did. So I feel like that really stuck with me. Yeah. And now I'm obsessed with animals. And anyway, so I went vegetarian for that reason. And then to be honest, in terms of becoming a dietitian, I started in university just in general sciences, and I didn't even really know that dietetics was a job. I didn't even know there were people who did that, who talked about food all day and that sort of thing. But I was in general sciences and I really did not like it. I just felt like there was there was no path that I was enjoying in it. So I went to go talk to the St. FX guidance counselor, which is the school that Hannah and I both went to for our first couple of years.
Yeah.
And she recommended that I switch to dietetics. And oh. It was just a really easy switch. And it was pretty simple. And then all of a sudden I was on the path to becoming a registered dietitian. But I feel like the wool was totally pulled over my eyes in terms of the process. Because,
right.
Hannah, as you know, it's such a competitive process to actually become a dietitian. And I had no idea that that was even a thing. So anyway, and then I decided to switch to the University of Guelph and kind of pursued my education there. And I did my dietetic internship with the Nova Scotia Health Authority. And it was around then that I kind of decided that I wanted to go more on the path of veganism. And it was mostly because I was so motivated in terms of animal welfare reasons.
Right.
And I just felt like I could be doing more in terms of that, just because, you know, we know that while you can reduce your meat consumption, and that's awesome and that's amazing, but animals are still being kept for their dairy and eggs and that sort of thing. So mm-hmm. I just felt like I could be doing a little bit more in terms right. of that. And the passion just really snowballed. It became something that I was obsessed with reading research about, and it kind of just felt like a whole new world that I didn't really get to learn about in my undergraduate degree or really even my internship. And so I just decided that I really wanted to kind of dive into it. And then, you know, I decided to do a master's of public health because I just felt like I wanted to learn how to kind of educate a broader
right.
amount of people than kind of just the clinical, typical education. I just felt like the internship that I did was really, really clinical heavy. So working in the hospital, mm-hmm. which was amazing, but it just wasn't really where I saw myself.
Yeah.
And maybe I feel like you kind of feel the same way.
Absolutely,
Hannah.
So, yeah.
So I just kind of thought, you know, a master's of public health would kind of help me in that way. And it definitely did. And so gave me a bit more confidence in terms of, you know, reading the research and
yep.
being able to disseminate this evidence-based information to a wider audience, I think. So that was really the path. And then I worked with a few key researchers during my time in my master's degree. I worked with Dr. David Jenkins, who's an incredible Canadian researcher. And he actually, fun fact, kind of invented or co-founded the glycemic index.
Oh, wow.
Which is crazy. And he's plant-based. So he really took me under his wing and we did some research together. And he was really emphasizing that I should start a private practice and that I should kind of go on that path. And so I did. And then it's really just taken off from there. I get to kind of talk about plant-based nutrition every day, which is so much fun for me. And yeah, it's a little unconventional in terms of my education wasn't necessarily centered around plant-based nutrition.
Right.
But I think dietetics in general is really opening up to that kind of area of thinking. And even if you're not wanting to focus specifically on plant-based nutrition, I know a lot of dietitians are really open to it now, which is so awesome to see.
Yeah. I mean, I totally agree. But I think that's like the beauty of the dietetics degree. It almost like, it just like gives you the tools to then kind of go off, or even your master's of public health to then like go off and like specialize in what you want to specialize in. Like, even though we don't get a ton of like plant-based nutrition education in those degrees, you definitely, like you said, after your master's of public health, we're more able to like disseminate the research to a wider audience and get your messages out there a little better. So that's really, I love, I think, what am I trying to say? When you and I met, I think you were still a vegetarian. Like, I think I remember you saying that.
Yeah.
And then so it was really cool to see you make the switch to veganism, and you make it look like, I don't know, I just think on social media and on your blog, not that you make it look easy, but you definitely make it really approachable, for sure.
Oh, good. That's always my goal. You know, I think there's a lot out there in terms of influencers who are really hardcore and who aren't healthcare professionals and who try to make it seem like everything has to be a super strict regimen, yeah, and it's a lot to think about and you have to do it perfectly and things like that. And so I really just try and make it seem as approachable as possible because, mm-hmm, and I think, I mean, we'll probably get into this more later, but I think so many people see veganism or eating plant-based as black or white.
Right.
And for some people that works and that's awesome.
Yes.
But for other people it doesn't. And so why should we scare away the people who don't want to go,
right,
100% by making it seem unapproachable? So I'm glad that it comes off that way because that's kind of what I'm trying to do for sure.
No, you definitely, like I've definitely seen, you know, being in the food and nutrition space as well, the types of vegans who are very, like you said, kind of black and white, or like if you're not 100% vegan, you're totally like bad, or like you're doing it wrong, whatever. But it how else are you going to get people to make those changes? Or like, it's in any sort of behavior change unless you are like compassionate and you know, helping people make the smaller steps, right? Rather than just like, you have to make this one big change, like cut everything out immediately. And for some people, they do kind of like cold turkey, like, I don't know, that's kind of a funny saying talking about veganism. But,
I know.
They just like stop eating, you know, animal products altogether. But then for some people, it's like a slower transition, kind of like yours. Okay. So Lauren, on this podcast, we are really big about, you know, busting nutrition BS or nutrition myths. So I want to know, what are some of the biggest myths around plant-based or vegan eating? And what do you have to say to those myths?
I actually feel like, Lauren, you kind of brought one up a little bit earlier, and obviously I want to hear so many more, but I kind of want to make sure that listeners maybe understand that it can be kind of a myth. Like you were talking about how you don't necessarily have to go like all the way extremely plant-based in a diet. It's just like, it is a nice thing to be able to incorporate more plant-based food into your diet. Like you don't have to necessarily commit to it 100%. It's not like that. I think that is one myth about going vegan or going vegetarian, is that you just have to go all the way immediately.
Right.
100%. And I think that's a huge deterrent for some people. I mean, mm-hmm, I know personally, I can talk from experience. I, like I said, went vegetarian 9 or 10 years ago, and I was actually eating mostly vegan. I'd say 90 to 95% vegan, if not more, for right, probably 2 to 3 years before I really told anyone that I was trying to do that, mostly just for fear of judgment and also just not wanting to put myself in that box in case I did slip up and I was out to eat and felt like there was nothing that didn't have cheese on the menu or something like that. So, I mean, I can totally empathize with people who don't want to put themselves in that box of calling themselves vegan or calling themselves vegetarian. But I always say, like, anything is better than nothing. If this is something that you're interested in doing, then you don't need to go 100% of the way. If you find yourself progressing to wanting to incorporate more of those plant-based foods as time goes on, then that's awesome. But you can be playful with it and you can have fun with it, and you don't need to be so restrictive and strict and putting yourself in that box if you don't feel comfortable doing so.
I really appreciate you busting that myth, actually, because it does make it seem like, well, the reality is that it should be more accessible, and this is actually allowing people to see that it can be more accessible. Like, you don't have to go all the way, depending on your circumstances, of food availability, the resources around you, depending on where you live, the kind of food varies that you can not even just affordably purchase from a store, but if it's even there at all. So understanding that you don't have to commit 100% does indeed make it more accessible. I think that's an important myth to bust, actually.
100%. Yeah, I totally agree. I want to know, like, nutrition-wise about myths, like certain nutrients or things like that? Like, are there things that people assume about a vegan diet that are totally not true?
Yes, there are so many things. I could literally go on for hours, but I won't. I'll keep it concise. the biggest thing, of course, I think that we all know this, is where do you get your protein?
Right.
If I had a dime for every time someone asked me that, I would be a billionaire. But the thing is that, like, I actually do appreciate the question as a dietitian, especially because so many of us grew up in households or even times where we focused on getting our protein from meat and even dairy. And so, you know, some of us just don't know where else you would get your protein on a plant-based diet.
I mean, that's a good point, because you can almost flip it on its head and say, your protein sources are way more narrow than mine as a vegan.
Right.
Because you only grew up like within this narrow scope of like, I'm going to get my protein from like beef and dairy or something.
100%. I mean, I did not like beans until I went, I would say vegan, like even vegetarian, I didn't love beans. And I mean, I can talk about that more later, but just the variety of food that you
I love beans. You can absolutely talk beans as much as you want.
Oh man. But I think people just don't understand, first of all, the amount of protein that we actually need as people is a lot lower than what people assume. So we need about 0.8 grams of protein per kilogram of our own body weight. If you are following a vegan diet, I do recommend getting a little bit higher. So about 0.9 grams per kilogram, just because of the fiber that's in those protein sources, like the beans, is going to make the protein slightly less bioavailable. I mean, very, very slightly. So increasing a little bit can be beneficial. Right. But again, that's like, it's just so low. And of course, that depends on, you know, your own body weight, your activity level, how much food you like to eat, so many different things. But that's just a general kind of guidance, but that's a lot lower than what a lot of people think. And I always say, if you are including good sources of plant-based protein into your everyday eating pattern, so things like beans and lentils and other legumes, tofu, tempeh, edamame, soy milk, nuts and seeds, all of these things, if you're incorporating them into your meals, and if you are eating enough calories for your body, then protein is not going to be an issue on a plant-based diet.
Okay. So that's good to know. And I love that you say, like, you don't mind that question as a dietitian. And I think that's really important for nutrition professionals. Like, it seems like you use it as a way to like educate people. So, you know, that really annoying question that people ask that you could easily just like brush off and be like, yes, of course I get enough protein, or like, I get my protein from lots of places. You kind of flip it and like use it as a way to educate people about vegan diets and plant-based eating, and therefore probably making it more, like I said, approachable for people. So I really appreciate that. One thing, so you said that protein isn't, you know, it's not an issue for people on plant-based diets if they're eating, you know, enough calories and they're eating balanced meals. So are there, excuse me, Oh my gosh.
Hannah, are you okay?
I've got a frog in my throat.
Listeners, if you could just take a sip of water in solidarity with Hannah.
Oh my god. Okay, so are there specific nutrients of concern or things that you would recommend for all vegans to consider?
Definitely. So there are a few nutrients that I would say we have to be more aware of. And then there are some that we absolutely need to take supplements for. So really quickly, the main ones that I always kind of go over with clients as just a general rule of thumb for pretty much everyone who's following a predominantly plant-based diet are calcium and iron. I'm always kind of flagging those as things to kind of be considerate of, because I think a lot of people you know, don't know exactly where to get good sources right. of calcium and iron on a plant-based diet, because those are more typically thought of as nutrients that you would get either from dairy or from meat. And they are right. actually pretty abundant on a plant-based diet. So you can get calcium from things like almonds and almond butter, sesame seeds, tahini. I always suggest people to drink fortified plant-based milk. So, you know, making your own plant-based milk is awesome and fun, and it can be less expensive and, you know, less packaging, things like that, but it's not going to be fortified. So
it's resourceful on a pinch, but yeah, I definitely right. understand what you're saying. Yep.
Exactly. Whereas if you buy plant-based milk that's fortified from the grocery store, it's going to have the same amount of calcium as cow's milk. So it's a really easy right. one-for-one swap there. Dark leafy greens are going to be good sources of calcium, soy products, things like that. But just yeah. kind of flagging that to make sure that you are getting those sources of calcium throughout your day. The other thing is iron. So I think a lot of people think of, you know, are you going to be iron deficient on a plant-based diet? But actually the incidence of iron deficiency anemia happens just as commonly in people who follow omnivorous diet as those who follow right. well-planned plant-based diets. But the key is well-planned. You have to be cognizant of where you're going to be getting those iron sources. Again, okay. it's not hard, but things like lentils and black beans, tofu, tempeh, again, those protein kind of sources, pumpkin seeds and dark leafy greens are going to be good sources of iron. So just flagging to make sure that you're kind of getting those in your diet, and also pairing them with a good source of vitamin C, because the vitamin C really boosts the absorption of that plant-based iron. But then there are other nutrients that we know that you actually do need to be taking a supplement of. I don't know if you want to talk about that now or
Yeah, absolutely. We can kind of go into supplements, and I know we've done a whole episode on supplements, but not specific to plant-based eating, but there's so much buzz and like noise out there about supplements and what you should be taking, what you shouldn't be taking. So yeah, maybe you can kind of clear that up. Like what do you recommend for plant-based eaters?
Yeah, so it will depend a little bit, you know, person to person, of course, as everything in nutrition does. But in general, for people who are following even I would say an 80% plant-based diet, they should be taking a vitamin B12 supplement. So right. vitamin B12 is so important for DNA synthesis in the body. It's so important to for our energy levels. It helps to rid yeah. the body of homocysteine, which is a potentially harmful breakdown product of protein. And it's very, very limited on a plant-based diet, to the point where basically, if you were eating a whole foods plant-based diet, you wouldn't be able to get enough vitamin B12. Our body does make a very small amount, but it's definitely not enough to live off of. There are a lot of plant-based or vegan foods, like vegan meats and vegan milks and things like that, that are fortified with vitamin okay. B12. But I don't recommend relying on those, just because right. the amount of food that we eat on a daily basis changes so much. And then, you know, right. the amount of, like, the types of food and things like that. And vitamin B12 is such an important one that I recommend definitely taking a vitamin B12 supplement.
That does make me curious. So I'm definitely aware of like all the buzz around supplements and companies kind of trying to market them to a very general consumer base rather than actually focusing on clinical evidence. So I don't necessarily love taking supplements. I actually do take a few because my family physician through blood tests noticed that I was low in a few things. So I do take a couple mm-hmm. of things. And one of the things that I've been low in and take a supplement for because of the evidence shown by a blood test is my B12 was low. So I do take a B12 supplement, and we didn't really discuss necessarily why it was low, but it is making me, my diet is mostly plant-based, but I'm not a vegan. I'm not a vegetarian. I do incorporate, animal products as well in my diet, but I am curious I wonder if maybe it's because my diet is very plant-based that I am low in B12 and was recommended to take a supplement.
It could be. It could also be because even animal products, so if you are eating meat, that meat, typically the animal is given a vitamin B12 supplement in their feed. So they have to kind of be fortified with that vitamin B12 as well. And that isn't always regulated. So it's hard to know exactly how much of that vitamin B12 is actually being absorbed into the tissue of the right. animal, and then how much yeah. of that is actually showing up in the meat. So it is actually pretty common to see people who follow omnivorous diets to be vitamin B12 deficient as well.
Right.
So yeah, so that's definitely interesting. I mean, I'm glad you're taking a supplement, because that can definitely impact a whole host of things kind of going on in your body as well.
Wow. That's, I never knew that. So you're seriously, I was telling Carrick before, like, you're so knowledgeable.
I just, I love it so much.
I'm really, you know, knowledgeable in this one area. I mean, it's like my niche area, so I'm relatively right. knowledgeable, but there's so many people that know so much more than me. I'm like mind blown all the time.
No, but I really appreciate the kind of the way that you approached this kind of supplementation thing, especially talking about earlier when you were mentioning, you know, some of the things that you might recommend. You are recommending people to consume them from foods in their diet rather than immediately jumping on to supplements, especially because I do often feel like it does end up being a money pit, and people might be, you know, for lack of a better word, expelling, you know, the supplement in their waste because they're not necessarily absorbing it because they don't need it. It's an excess at the point that they're taking in the supplement. But it's definitely very interesting to hear all of this, because I didn't know about that evidence of B12 being deficient in, you know, not just necessarily people on plant-based diets, mm-hmm. but other people as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
One thing that we talk about on the podcast is, you know, aside from nutrition, Tarek and I have a passion for cooking, and I know you do too, Lauren. And so one thing that goes along with, obviously, you know, cooking and knowing how to cook is specific food skills. So we're curious, in becoming vegan, do you think that there are specific food skills that people have to take on, or, you know, is there a learning curve kind of cooking wise that people have to face when they become vegan or shift to a more plant-based diet? Like, is this
I'm really curious about what you think, Lauren, because I actually, people who listen will know, I was a raw vegan for 9 months, like a really weird like part of my life, and I definitely like wasn't ready for it in terms of food skills. So I'm really curious what you think, and maybe how you approach food skills with your clients.
Mm-hmm. I love this question. This is so good, because we can be given all of the information that we need to know and things like that. But then when we actually implement it, that's like a whole yeah. other ball game. And I think as dietitians, like, this is where we really need to be like stepping in, like not just telling people
right.
what to eat, but like, okay, how do you actually do that? Yes. So I don't think, personally, and what I've kind of experienced, is being vegan is necessarily harder in terms of cooking than eating right. an omnivorous diet. But I do think that it's important to consider the fact that most of us didn't grow up this way. So most of us eating this type of food and preparing food this way and things like that. So I don't think it's harder, but I think people just aren't so used to it. So
that's such an interesting point. It kind of calls back to what you were saying earlier about how people are more used to getting their sources of protein not from a plant-based diet, which is why they necessarily might be confused or scared about how they're going to get their protein that way, because it's just not how they grew up.
Exactly. So it can definitely take some time to kind of get used to it. And I always tell people, at the beginning, that's when you're going to be spending the most time in the kitchen. And that's when you're going to be spending the most time at the grocery store, if you do want to kind of go fully vegan or fully plant-based, kind of reading labels and making sure there's no ingredients in there that come from animals, things like that. But it does get a lot easier over time. And I can kind of say, you know, for myself and for a lot of my clients, this way of eating is actually, you spend a lot less time in the kitchen and kind of preparing food and things like that. And also a lot less kind of worrying. Like I know for me, when I did eat meat and dairy, it was always like, oh, is the meat going to go bad? Am I making
sure I eat it to the right temperature? I remember the freedom of not having to worry about cross contamination. I do remember
that. Exactly. And not having to concern myself with, okay, is the meat fully cooked through? Things like that. I mean, just a personal anecdote. Our fridge broke the other day and, you know, everything in the fridge basically went warm, but there were only a handful of things that I was actually concerned about because I was like, well, we don't eat meat or dairy. Like, you know, things are pretty good. So just things like that, that make life a little bit easier. But I will say, I do think it's really important to kind of have like three or four meals in your kind of weekly rotation that you know how to make really well, that are, you know, that you can go to the grocery store and get really simple ingredients for, that you can whip up in like half an hour. Because I think a lot of the time what can be challenging for people is thinking about what they're going to make, because I think we're so used to having that kind of meat and then some sort of like grain or potato or something like that, and then a veggie. But then when you eat plant-based, I mean, you could, you know, just have like beans and rice and veggies, but a lot of times people want like a more complete meal than that. And so you're having a lot more like mixed dishes, like curries and soups and stir fries and that sort of thing, that I think having a few recipes like that can make things a lot easier for people, if that makes sense.
Totally.
Yeah, totally. I like that. That's a really great recommendation, having like a few things or a few dishes in your back pocket that you like nail down or you know really well, and then you can kind of expand from there. I think that's really, really helpful for some people.
I think when you think about it too, it's like, even if you're not on a plant-based diet, I'm sure everybody listening can sympathize. I mean, we're not like Michelin star chefs, like not necessarily making something completely out of your comfort zone every single day. Maybe you try something different every once in a while, but that's a really good tip, nailing down a few dishes so that you can go back to them pretty regularly. Yeah, that makes it a lot more accessible for sure.
Definitely.
One thing I will say is that I'm totally like with you in that I hate worrying about, like, again, I'm similar to Tarek. Like, I follow a very, like, plant-forward diet, but I don't have any sort of, like, I don't, I haven't cut anything out completely. And one thing that I like about eating more plant-based is that I don't have to worry about storing meat in the fridge or, like, cooking it, like, completely through and things like that. Like, those are things that I've just never, and I mean, again, it would come with practice, but it's something that I've never really felt 100% comfortable with. And like, yeah, getting the right, you know, cooking the meat just right, or like so that it's a certain texture and like things like that. It's just something that, I don't know, I never really liked doing. I don't know. Sometimes I find it almost easier to not have to worry about cooking meat and things like that. But
I think that's such a great tip for everybody from Lauren, is like, just look up some good recipes, you know, that you're interested in, and really learn those first. And that's a great starting point.
Yeah, because you can build off of that, right? You can kind of like, okay, now I know how to cook lentils this way, or now I know how to, you know, prepare tofu this way. And then you can kind of like start playing around with the other ingredients you use with it, or the sauces and things like that.
Definitely. I totally, totally agree.
Okay, so this is a bit of a big question, but it's something that, you know, Tarek and I have been talking about a lot more, and it's a really important conversation to have around, you know, privilege and, you know, disparities in healthcare and things like that. We've been talking about that a lot. So we want to know, do you feel like there's any privilege in like comfortably or healthfully maintaining a vegan diet?
Yeah, this is an amazing question. I'm so happy you brought it up, because yes, I absolutely do. I think anyone who is able to make any sort of choice about what they want to eat is in a privileged position.
Absolutely.
Totally.
So, there are so many people who have to rely on sticking to a really, really strict budget or whatever they have, you know, either financial or physical access to and things like that. And, you know, can eating a vegan diet be inexpensive? Yes, it definitely can be. But that doesn't mean that everyone even has that choice to be able to choose what they're eating. And so I think it's really important to kind of highlight that. Like, if you are concerned about getting a meal on the table or, you know, where your next paycheck is going to be coming from or something like that, the last thing that you're going to be worrying about is, oh, am I following a vegan diet? Like, it's just not
totally. Even priorities come into account.
100%. So I think it would be negligent to say that it's not a privilege to be able to follow a vegan diet or even to be able to just choose what you're eating on a daily basis.
Absolutely. One thing that I do really admire about you, Lauren, is that you don't, in your recipes and the things that you share, you don't use or like recommend a lot of, you know, expensive like vegan substitutes or I mean like here and there obviously you know you show that you're eating them or something like that, but your diet really is focused around simple foods and foods that are I would say more accessible, not necessarily like we've said accessible for everyone, but and I really admire that because there are even and not just in the plant-based world but in a lot of like health and wellness or on a lot of health and wellness platforms, you see all these like expensive products or like these, you know, these granola bars or these powders or whatever from like the
or
health
like, food. Like faux store. Cream cheese, totally.
Right, that are like really expensive. And so I admire that, you know, you don't necessarily promote these things that often. So again, that's a good way I feel like to make veganism a little more accessible for people who might think that it's you know expensive or difficult to carry out.
I totally agree. That's always my goal. Like I want people to be able to go to No Frills, which if you don't live in Canada is kind of like I would say a discounted grocery store, I guess. And honestly, that's where I shopped throughout my entire undergraduate degree. And
me too.
It's okay. It's amazing. It's so much less expensive. Yeah. The food is great. I want people to be able to go to No Frills and make all of my recipes. I don't think that we need to be eating all of these really expensive, you know, vegan substitutes or even like ingredients that are harder to find because, you know, like I'm totally for the vegan substitutes every so often if you're having a craving for them or whatever it might be. But I'm basing that more on like taste preferences, you know what I mean? But I want people to be able to get the ingredients for my recipes from pretty much
I love there. That vision that you have. I love that.
Me too. I really appreciate it. And I'm sure that a lot of your clients and a lot of people that follow you do as well.
I remember, sorry, Hannah.
No, I was just saying it's really refreshing in like today's like wellness kind of world and like culture that we're living in with all these expensive products. And I was actually thinking the other day just about again, in the last month or so, there's been a lot of conversation around, like I said, privilege and healthcare and how to make just, healthcare more accessible or health messaging more accessible to a wider range of people. And I think one of the things that came to my mind is like, we all need to stop, not the three of us, but just like everyone, we all need to stop like promoting all these like health food products and in the influencer world, like if you want to make things more accessible for people, like stop working with these brands that are like, you know, $100 like $70 little tub of powder and like stuff like that and like saying that people need this for health. Like, you know, I don't know. That was just one frustration that I had the last couple of weeks is like, let's stop with that and try to like make our messaging more approachable for people. And I think you do a good job of that.
Oh, thank you. No, I completely agree. It just astounds me. And I think especially in like you're saying, the wellness and vegan community, all of the things that people try and make you feel like you need to have in order to mm-hmm. be doing it correctly. And I mean, yeah. like Hannah and I did an unpaid year-long internship. And then yeah. I went right. on and did a master's immediately after for 2 years that I had to pay for. Like, I didn't have the money to be spending on things that weren't necessary. And right. even now, like, I'm not trying to spend like hundreds and hundreds of dollars each week on my grocery bill. So I completely understand being, you know, wanting to have more of a budget on a plant-based diet and not wanting to be, you know, having to do all of these fancy things and that sort of thing. So I always try and just remember that, I think.
Yeah. And definitely not on your platform, but on other other vegan platforms, the things that are maybe, you know, very eye-catching and clickbaity and things that, you know, are promoted as like awesome vegan alternatives are sometimes the things that are a bit more, you know, financially a bit more expensive, I guess I'll say. Because I yeah. remember when I was vegan, it's like, oh, I want to make cheese for... Being vegan isn't just making fake cheese. There's obviously so much that you can eat. But one of the things that's advertised is, of course, like, make your own cheese for your own pizza. So you need cashews. And I go to the grocery yeah. store and it's this like $27 bag of 10 cashews. I'm like, I cannot afford to do this. But obviously yeah, there's oh my so gosh. Much more beyond that that people maybe necessarily aren't exposed to because they haven't found the right resources or the right platforms.
100%. Honestly, one of the best days of my life was when I realized that you could swap sunflower seeds for cashews in any sort of like recipe that might use cashews to make things creamier, because sunflower Ooh. Seeds are literally a fraction of the price.
That's a great tip.
Yeah, and it just makes things so much easier because I'm not about to go out and get bags and bags of cashews either. But Tarek, I think that's a quote to live by. Vegan isn't all about making cashew cheese. Like, yes, totally.
It's not. Agree. I mean, that, like, Big Cashew has this like huge monopoly over people who like are like entering a vegan phase of their life, and we need to like dismantle that like oligarchy that they control.
Big Cashew?
Yeah.
I'm dying. That is so
oh
funny.
My god. I totally agree.
I love that. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about your practice, because you've built a pretty successful nutrition practice for, you know, around plant-based nutrition. So maybe tell us what some common challenges your clients see when you're talking to them, and some really, I don't know, popular questions you get, or like big things that your clients want to know from you.
Mm-hmm. Such a good question. So, you know, I see everyone kind of on the spectrum of plant-based eating in terms of people
okay.
who really just want to incorporate one or two plant-based meals into their week.
Oh, wow.
And up to people who are, you know, full-on vegan, have been vegan for, you know, 30 plus years. So I really see kind yeah. of everyone in between. And so everyone does have slightly different, you know, concerns and questions and things like
yeah.
that. But I would say, honestly, the number one question, am I getting enough protein? Which, you know, we already kind yeah. of covered. But another thing is also feeling satisfied from the food that they're eating. So I find a lot of people come to me and they say, you know, I'm following a vegan or a plant-based diet, and either they find themselves being hungry, you know, all the time, or they find themselves craving a lot of like sweets or more like snack foods, that sort of thing, which mm-hmm. totally fine. I know yes. Hannah and I both, and I'm sure you too, Tarek, are all about kind of like the intuitive eating world and,
yes,
and incorporating
absolutely.
Those foods and that sort of thing. But I really do want to get with them to kind of the underlying reason of why. And I find a lot of people
yeah.
who follow plant-based diets just aren't eating enough. And that can be a major concern. So whether that be because they aren't eating big enough meals, which is a big thing on a plant-based diet, because I think people go from eating meals that are heavier in meat or dairy, which are more calorie dense, to eating plant-based meals, which have a lot of fiber in them. So they'll help you to kind of feel fuller faster, which can be a great thing. But then, you know, you might be left not eating enough calories for your body. And we know that you need calories to kind of have that energy. And so a lot of people really struggle with that and don't know that they should be eating a lot more, probably, than they're used to eating, whether that be increasing the size of the meals, increasing snacks, things like that. And then a lot of people kind of focus really heavily on increasing their fruit and vegetable consumption, which is awesome. Of course, I'm really, really happy about that. But we also want to be making sure that we are replacing the foods that we're not eating anymore. So maybe that's meat or dairy, with foods that are going to give a relatively similar nutrition profile, which vegetables are awesome, but they're not going to give you the same kind of bang for your buck in terms of nutrition than something like beans or lentils or tofu or tempeh, that sort of thing. And then whole grains as well, or kind of those like starchier vegetables like potatoes, things like that. Like, we need to be incorporating those in order to make sure that we're feeling really satisfied from our food. So I think that's something that a lot of people kind of struggle with, is recognizing if I'm taking something away from my diet, I have to be replacing it with something else, because we want to feel really satisfied and really energized and really nourished from the food that we're eating. And, you know, eating just fruit or vegetables just isn't going to get us there.
Yeah. I love that so much, that you say, you know, if we're taking something out, we have to replace it with something, because I feel like in this like diet world that we live in, it's all about cutting things out and like removing this from this thing, you know, and you're saying like the opposite, like if you're going to cut something out, you need to replace it. I love that so much. This is why I love you, Lauren. Like, you're so,
I'm
like,
obsessed with you, Lauren.
I'm obsessed with you too, Derek. Both of you. No, it's so true. I feel like my clients like get tired of me saying this, and in Thriving on Plant-Based Fundamentals, I say this a lot too, but like, I am so much more concerned about what you are eating than what you're not. Like, I think it's great if you want to be kind of cutting down on your meat and dairy consumption, but that means that I want to be seeing you including a lot more of these other foods into your everyday eating pattern.
Yeah, totally.
I am kind of, you're making me really curious about a few things. I wonder if I can sit in the client's chair just for a second and ask you a question.
Absolutely. Yep, go for it.
And I don't want to make more work for Hannah. I don't know if like, and if you're not comfortable talking about this, maybe we can cut it out. But, you know, I didn't necessarily label myself. So I've been like on and off vegan for a long time, and I didn't necessarily label myself vegan before my relationship, but I pretty much was. I don't think I very, very rarely had an animal product. But upon entering a new relationship and kind of moving in and two people kind of adapting to each other's lifestyles, I found it just like, you know, the groceries that we buy and like what my partner is interested in eating in versus what I'm interested in eating in, I have found myself getting back to eating more animal products. So I'm curious, like, how, if I'm maybe interested in kind of going back to the diet that I had before, have you experienced this? Or like, do you have any tips for people who maybe are living in one home, but people are interested in eating different kinds of meals?
That's such a good question. And I get this all the time. So I completely understand where you're coming from. So honestly, my biggest tip is to try and focus on the meals that either you can make. And then if your partner wants to add meat to them later, then they're more than welcome to do so. But that meal can be a standalone meal for you on your own. So let's think of some examples, like something like a soup. Like I have like a chickpea noodle soup on my blog that's pretty popular. And that could be a complete meal for you. But if your partner wanted to add chicken to it or something like that, then they would be more than welcome to do so. All they'd have to do is kind of cook up a chicken breast and kind of add it in. Things like tacos are so easy to kind of make, like a lentil mixture. And then you can both just kind of make your own stuff. And if, again, if they want to add meat to that, like,
well, I hope he listens to this episode because I do all the cooking, but I shouldn't complain because he does all the laundry.
Oh my gosh, I love that. So that's kind of the thing. So I mean, and another kind of approach that you can take with it is if you are someone who does all of the cooking, you know, saying that when I'm cooking, I'm going to be cooking plant-based meals. And if you want to be eating meat or whatever, then you can kind of cook that for yourself. Or if you want to be cooking a meal that has meat, then you can cook that for us. But whenever I'm cooking, I'm going to be making plant-based meals and just seeing what he says. Like, you know,
we're going to get into couples counseling territory here.
maybe that's an aggressive approach, but I mean, I
like it.
If you're doing the cooking, then like you kind of get to decide what you're making. And then obviously another thing that you can do, but I know we were kind of talking about the price of things, is relying more heavily on those plant-based alternatives. Like I think I don't know how long ago you were kind of vegan or plant-based, Tarek, but
like 4 years now.
Right. So,
and it's still mostly my diet, but yeah, it's definitely different.
Yeah, I feel like the alternatives have come such a long way, even in the past few years, that if you were making kind of a traditional meat or dairy dish, then having those alternatives, like, you know, ground fake meat or like vegan sausages or vegan chicken breasts, like there's some brands that are definitely better than others, but having those on hand and then it just being a really easy alternative. Like I eat a lot more of those alternatives, I will say, now living with my partner than I did before, because he loves them and he really enjoys eating those foods.
Oh, interesting. So you're kind of dealing with a similar-ish situation.
So yeah, my boyfriend he's vegetarian. He's been vegetarian for years. And he, I would say, is like 98% vegan. Like the only time he'll really eat dairy or eggs is when he's like at a restaurant and, you know, I'm very comfortable like asking the server if there's meat or dairy and things and like making sure that I can get something and that sort of thing. But, you know, when he's...
Of course. I mean, for anybody who's scared to do that, you're not the first person who's asked that restaurant to get you a vegan option. So I think people should be less worried about that.
100%. But it is something that a lot of people are concerned about, which I understand. I was kind of nervous about doing that at the beginning too.
It can be scary, of course. Yeah.
Yeah, but I worked as a server for probably 3 years, and I never really cared when people would ask.
You've heard it all. Yeah.
Yeah. So
there's worse questions to ask.
Exactly. But no, it can definitely be, I totally understand. It can be kind of a hard transition when you're living with someone else and kind of not wanting to make those double meals and things like that. But I would kind of put the onus back on them and say, like, I'm going to be making this, more than happy for you to kind of add whatever you want to the meal. But this is kind of what I'm going to be cooking right now. And of course you can start slow, of course, like,
yeah,
you know, there can still be some meals that you are happy to cook with meat or whatever it might be in it. But then if you wanted to kind of increase that, then I think that's,
maybe I'll do a slow fade on him on meat. And we can have you back on in the future and I'll update you on what happened.
Yeah,
I love that. Please do.
I've noticed in the vegan world a no oil like trend, or it seems like a lot of vegan like influencers or bloggers either like don't use much oil or they don't use it at all. And they, for some reason, I don't know, they must have the impression that it's bad. Like, what do you think about that, Lauren?
such a good question. I did a post just talking about fat, probably like not oil, not isolating oil, just talking about getting enough fat on a plant-based diet.
Right.
That is another thing that some people do kind of struggle with and overlook. But basically, so many of the questions were about my opinion on oil and right. what I think about it and things like that, because you're so right. It is such a huge question in the vegan space. And I think it mostly comes from people who follow a whole foods plant-based diet. So that really means just eating legumes and whole grains and fruits and vegetables and nuts and seeds, that sort of thing, and who choose not to have these more kind of highly or even just, you know, kind of slightly quote unquote processed foods, and they do consider oil to be a processed food.
So
there have been some studies by some physicians, I'm thinking specifically Dr. Esselstein, and, you know, a few others as well, who have shown that for those who have suffered cardiac events, so if they've had a heart attack or something like that, following a very low fat and no oil diet, plant-based diet, has been shown to improve outcomes and decrease risk of having kind of a secondary event or another something event. Like that. My kind of qualms with this is, I think, and I'm sure you guys feel the exact same way, is taking research that is for one very, very specific population and kind of applying it to the general population.
Oh my God, yes.
Which I'm sure you guys talk about, you know, and
definitely a running theme.
Yeah, we literally talked about this last week. Yeah.
And it's just, it's a huge concern because, you know, first of all, that's such a specific subgroup of the population. Mm-hmm. And also most of the research has been done on men as well. And we know that women need adequate fat in order to maintain menstrual cycles, or, you know, people who menstruate, I should say, need that to maintain their menstrual cycle. They need that for maintaining hormone levels. I mean, men need healthy fats as well, but people who menstruate really need to be maintaining that for sure. So that's one concern. And then also fat helps us feel satisfied with our food. And when we are depriving ourselves of the fat in our food, it can leave us feeling still hungry later or peckish or craving all of these different foods that maybe we wouldn't otherwise if we were just trying to have more of a kind of balanced meal with including all of the essential macronutrients. But especially with oil, what people are concerned about is that, oh, it's a high calorie food for not much bang for your buck. So people always kind of go back to the fact of one tablespoon of oil has something like 110 calories.
Yeah.
It doesn't have any fiber in it. It doesn't have a ton in terms of nutrients. And so it's not going to leave you feeling as full as eating 110 calories of, like, you know, legumes or whole grains or veggies or something like that, which again, I can, you know, on the one hand, I can understand that argument, but I think if people are using oil in moderation, like cooking a dish using oil, they're not going to be using most likely more than a tablespoon. And that whole tablespoon is going to be redistributed to so many different servings of the dish.
Exactly.
And even cooked off to a big degree.
Yeah, and so I think that, that point is kind of moot in some cases.
Agreed.
And then I think that there's some meals that are just so much better with oil. Like, I couldn't imagine making, like, a bruschetta and not adding any oil.
I was going to say, what about the taste? It tastes amazing.
Exactly, yeah.
Exactly. And we know that fat in foods, and specifically in terms of oil, kind of clings to the spices or the salt or any of the flavors and helps to redistribute that throughout the dish. So
it coats your mouth, yeah.
Right. There's just so many considerations. So, you know, I do have clients that choose to eat either very, very low oil or no oil diet. And to that, I say, that's totally fine. We know that we can be getting these healthy fats from other foods. It's not like oil is this perfect food that we need to be included into our diet. Like, we can get fat from other things. But I just really try and make sure that if we're not including oils, then how else are we getting healthy fats into our diet? Because that's something that we definitely need to be considerate of.
And that it's not like something that has to be cut out for all, you know, for someone who wants to eat a more nutritious diet or a healthier diet. Like, people can cut it out if they want to, but they don't have to.
Absolutely. Like, there's, you know, there's, in my opinion, not enough research to show that that's even something that we absolutely, you know, need to be doing. And even if it were, like, we care a lot about the enjoyment of people eating. And again, if having dishes with oil in them is going to make them feel more satisfied and enjoy their food more, then I think that that's awesome.
I think it's such a good example of the mind games that diet culture plays from these, like, tiny tidbits of scientific evidence that doesn't actually relate to what they're talking about. And Lauren, I have to say, I'm so inspired and I'm so appreciative of your empiricism and the way that you approach all of these topics with respect to vegan nutrition. And I mean, even more, I love so much, again, that point that Hannah brought up, how when you say, okay, if someone's going to cut something out, what are you going to replace it with? That's such an important thing. Again, kind of like showing people that, you know, don't let whatever influence get to you necessarily. You still need to be having or maintaining a healthy diet.
Exactly. Yeah, totally. Exactly. Oh, I'm happy to hear that.
Yeah. Okay. So we have absolutely loved having you on here, but before we close, Tarek and I, so we always have our, you know, our first segment, whether it's the BS of the week or the brain bite. And then at the end of the podcast, we share what's been tasty for us this week. So I guess maybe we'll, how do you feel about going first, Lauren? What's been tasty for you this week?
So as I alluded to, I haven't had a fridge for, you know, 5 days, or I should say a big fridge. Our landlord did bring us a mini fridge, which was very, very much so appreciated. Nice. Yes. So that has been nice. Honestly, this week hasn't been totally remarkable. I haven't been testing very many recipes this week, which is usually when I get more creative in the kitchen. I kind of follow that guideline of like 4 to 5 meals that are kind of my go-to meals. And then, you know, when I'm testing recipes, that's when I get more creative. And I haven't been doing that this week. But last night I made they're like kind of quote unquote baked beans. They're not baked at all. It's literally just tomato paste and white beans, and then I add some liquid smoke to it and some spices, and we had that on toast. And then I made sauteed kale, which usually I don't love cooked greens, but I made sauteed kale with nutritional yeast and a little bit of soy sauce, and it was so good. There was something about that meal that just hit different. It was exactly what I needed, and
I love that.
It was so good. But this weekend this weekend I'm going to a friend's cottage. The rules in Ontario kind of changed a little bit. So now we're allowed to have a couple people in our bubble. So we're going to a friend's cottage and they have a barbecue. So I'm excited to have some veggie burgers this weekend.
I love that. That's
tasty.
I'm hungry sitting here listening to that. Okay, Tarek, why don't you tell me what's been tasty for you?
Well, thank you for asking. Thank you for asking so much. So for me, actually, what's been tasty is I've been making some more salads recently, just kind of like easy, like quick meals to throw together, just like a big toss salad. And the tasty part of it is that I have this salad dressing recipe that I got from a very, very old friend of mine, which is basically, I don't know, we kind of talked about this, but I'm very I guess I'm very pro oil. So it has olive oil in it, Dijon mustard, lemon juice. And then I put up some like chopped up garlic in there, some chopped up ginger, black pepper. And then I just like kind of shake it all around. And I use that as a salad dressing. I think that's like a pretty common like group of things to put together for a salad dressing. And maybe I'll throw in that there's a difference between different kinds of at least olive oil. Canola oil doesn't really have much of a flavor. But buying good olive oil, as Ina Garten would say, good olive oil, like she writes in all of her recipes, is such a big difference than buying, you know, what's usually more less expensive olive oil. You have to wait. And my trick is you have to wait until the good olive oil goes on sale to get it. And then you can buy maybe two or three bottles when it's like $5 instead of normally like 15 or something because it's gone on sale. And then that will last you so long for months, maybe a year, over a year, because you're only using however much, like a tablespoon each time to make salad dressing or to use when you're frying something up or something like that. But the difference in flavor is so stark. I accidentally made the terrible mistake of buying really bad bulk olive oil because I was like, oh, this is a good price and there's so much of it. And it had no flavor and I just kind of had to live like that for months. And then recently, one of my favorite olive oils went on sale and it's an experience. I don't know. Oh, olive oil is magical.
That's amazing.
Well, Hannah, I have to ask you, what's been tasty for you this week?
Oh, thank you for asking. I just lost my train of thought for a sec. actually, what's been tasty for me this week, very similar to you, and actually all three of us have been talking about vegetables, Lauren with the kale, you with your salad and with salad dressing. I was going to say my tasty has been chopped salads. So not just like any salad, but and I've realized this over the last couple of years that I don't like a salad that's like big chunks of lettuce and like really big pieces of vegetables like tomatoes and I don't know, big cucumber chunks. Like I need my salad to be chopped up.
I agree. When a restaurant hands me a wedge of cabbage or a wedge of lettuce, I'm like, I'm not doing this work. Are you kidding me?
Why didn't you chop this up for me? So my, like, I love a good chopped salad that's like the lettuce is like still crisp, but it's been chopped up pretty finely. And like all the veggies have been chopped up really small. And then you toss it with your dressing. I have like the last couple months, I don't know if it was like a quarantine thing, but I've been experimenting with so many different like variations of chopped salads and making my own dressings at home. And this week I made one, actually last night I made another one. And I love just like, you know, experimenting with like the cheeses that I put in it or like the nuts that I put in it and the dressings. So that's my tasty of the week, chopped salads.
That sounds amazing. I'm obsessed with that. Man. Yeah,
I love that we all talked about salads and or like green things this week. Yeah. It's not always like that.
Lauren, I have to say I'm so appreciative of your time. I think this is one of our longer episodes, and it just I think that speaks for how much we've enjoyed talking to you and listening to you and learning so much from you. You're obviously an incredible scientist, and you bring that to your work and to your online platform. And I'm just you have a new fan. Like I'm totally obsessed. Thank you so much for everything.
Yeah. So maybe before you go, Lauren, tell everyone where they can find you so that they can go and follow you.
Sure. So you can find me on Instagram at tastingtothrive_RD. You can find me on my blog, tastingtothrive.com. And I also have a YouTube channel, Tasting to Thrive, as well.
Amazing. Well, yeah, we really, really appreciate you coming on. Like I said, you're so knowledgeable. I always love talking to you. Whenever you and I are talking, we could talk, like we have to stop ourselves because we could talk for hours. So yes, thank you so much. I'm sure everyone listening has really appreciated listening to you just as much as we have appreciated talking to you. And yeah, make sure you go give Lauren a follow and check out her stuff.
And check out her Instagram because it's beautiful. It's bowls on bowls on bowls.
Bowls on bowls.
Thank
I love
you.
It.
Thank you guys so much for having me. I appreciate it so much. And I love what you're both doing, getting rid of the BS in nutrition, focusing on yes. the evidence. That's what we need more of. And I'm so, so happy that you're both doing that. And it's honestly been such a pleasure to be on with you. And
you're officially pod family, so please come yeah. back whenever.
You're not friend of the pod.
Oh
you're
my gosh. I would love to.
All right. So for everyone listening, we will talk to you guys next week.